Hello, my name is Sam Dunnewald, and I am the host of Dice Exploder, the Emmy-nominated podcast all about RPG design right here on the Many-Sided Network. And after years of interviews and ideation with some of the best designers in RPGs, my first print game is coming to Kickstarter. Band-Aids and Bullet Holes, a John Wick-inspired game about getting your bloody revenge. Band-Aids and Bullet Holes is a game about standing in the shadow of a skyscraper in the pouring rain, bathed in bubblegum neon and someone else's blood, staring down at the man who ruined your life all those years ago, raising the barrel of a gun and asking, "Will you pull the trigger?" Band-Aids and Bullet Holes is a one-shot capsule game box set deck builder RPG, and you can follow it right now on Kickstarter. Back Band-Aids and Bullet Holes on May 5th.
Last time, we left off with our travelers still reeling from the tense confrontation with the oil rats. Kath was left alone in the motel room, trying to compose herself after the gang took nearly everything they had. Supplies, Neurocasters, and even Imani's cooler. Luke returned, leading to a heated argument about Catherine's decisions and their consequences, accusing her of selfishness, while Kath defended her actions as necessary to get them out of Bakersfield. It became clear that the loss of Imani's belongings had hit her harder than anyone expected. With her supplies and medical gear stolen, Imani felt she had little choice but to take matters into her own hands. She made the difficult decision to leave the group and return to Bakersfield, determined to track down the oil rats and recover what was taken from her. That was the last they heard from her, her fate now uncertain as they continue their journey without her. Ryan, meanwhile, tried to console Kath, reminding her of their shared goal of completing this journey together. But before they could relax, one of the oil rats had showed up, summoning them to retrieve their repaired car. The tension continued to rise as they reunited with Luke, and the group drove off, leaving Bakersfield behind, but not without a parting insult from the gang. Running low on gas, they stopped at an old self-serve station near a farming town, right outside Fresno. It was here that Ryan had an unexpected encounter, a huge drone in a barn that waved him over, inviting him to play a game. As curiosity got the best of him, Ryan found himself alone with the increasingly insistent drone, leaving his friends worried and calling out for him. And that's where we find ourselves now.
Ryan would kind of, realizing that drone is taking up the space of the barn doors, and even after kind of even trying to like get it to move out of the way, it didn't seem to move. He's kind of scratching at his head underneath his bucket hat. And then he kind of thinks of some things like, well, it loves games. Maybe if I change a game, I can get out. And so he kind of just says, hey, big fella. I know we've been playing hide and seek a lot and a little bit of tag, but me and my friend James, we used to play this game all the time. It's called Red Light, Green Light. I know you don't speak. And he'll kind of crouch down, pat the ground. So when I do this, green light, you can run towards me. But if I hit go like this and he'll tap just once and say red light, gotta stop. Does that sound like a fun game?
And it looks at you, its head still turned, contemplating. And I need you to make an empathy roll to convince the drone.
All right.
Meanwhile, Luke, before you state the what you got on the roll, Luke and Catherine, you do see and hear that there is something going on around the barn area. Are you guys looking over there? Has that thought come to you at all?
We were shouting for his name, so we'll definitely look anywhere. And considering that we saw the giant-ass drone, we'll probably, like, head to something, anything interesting.
I mean, Catherine's pretty worried as it is. So she's definitely just following whatever directions are about.
What were your results, Ryan?
No successes, but I think I'll push the roll, see if I can maybe convince this thing by like kind of play acting it out a bit, just like, oh, like trying to be two people at once on either side. Kind of be like red light, green light, and kind of run between the pillars of the barn, just to see if that convinces it a bit.
Is that one success?
Yes. Yeah, one success.
Okay, you got one success. The drone looks at you and it starts to nod its head.
Okay, okay. All right, big fella. You ready? Okay. Green light, and it kind of just goes down, hits the ground twice.
As soon as you say it, you can hear the large steps as it's trying to move forward. But the barn is not that large for him. Like, it's not large enough for the drone to take that many steps. So it can take about two before it's like almost at the end of the barn. And the opening is now available for you. And I need you to make an agility roll as you're trying to dodge past it as it is walking past you.
Alrighty. No successes. I'm going to push the... I just want to say
that Ryan has five dice that he can roll, and none of them were a success.
I like to think he tripped or his camera snags. No successes, though, and one hope lost.
No successes, one hope lost. But you do trip. And it's like slowly starts to turn around to see you running out of the door. And you can hear large steps and the whole body and the metal creaking as it turns around and starts to step forward to where you are at the entrance, but it can't fit out. Luke and Catherine, you both see him like trip out of the barn. Now that the drone's not covering the entrance anymore, you can clearly see him now.
Ryan, do you need help?
Go and get him.
Yeah. I look back to Kath. I said, then I'd rush towards Ryan.
Kath's like opening the car doors, like getting ready to like getting the like starting to get the car started.
Luke, guys, stay away from the barn.
Holy shit, Ryan. I immediately grab him and then just gonna pull him. It's like, what are you doing? And I just immediately drag. I will look over to Kat if the car is already coming this way, so it would be just a rush job. Else, I'm just gonna pull as hard as I can. Just get
Kat, and like driving up to them, and then like slowly, and then as she gets there, she gets out the car for Luke to drive. And then she like swap around, like literally like grab Ryan by the collar and like literally throw him into the backseat.
Slide
in after him.
It's just playing,
really? I get into the driver's side because I step the gas before I close the door, and then because it kind of peters out, it's like, ugh. And then I just slam the door and suddenly get the car moving again. Ryan, after, because like a few, probably a kilometer or two, because afterwards, Ryan, can you please be careful?
It was just having fun. I don't think it understood. And it was just so big, it just didn't know its own size. But it was fine. We were just having fun. I got out. I'm not hurt. It's a little dusty, but it worked out. Like, and anyway, we had enough time. You were running into the store. Kath was filling the car. I figured I'd see what it was doing.
But what we've just been through, you decide to walk off alone.
Exactly.
Ryan, you're smarter than this.
Kath, it wasn't even that far. I could see you guys from the barn.
And look at what happened.
Oh my god.
It wasn't my fault. It was just so big. It just sat in front of the barn door, and I just had to run past it.
I look in the rear view mirror so that I can see Ryan's face, and then I make sure he can see my face. Before we stop, we literally say this was an in and out thing. And we told you explicitly to stay in the car.
I know, but it was waving, and it was a lot nicer than what we had in Bakersville, and I figured, like, I'd get a photo, and then it wanted to show me something. I figured...
Oh, my God.
I figured it would be all right. I figured it was in and out. I didn't think it would take time.
Katha, like, throw her hands up over her face, drag them down, like, exasperatedly. This is exactly what happened in that diner. You can't just go up to random people, beings, robots, drones, and just assume they're not there to hurt you, Ryan. Everything, everyone we have come across so far has tried to hurt you in some way. Be smarter.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you're right.
But I'm not trying to make you feel bad, I promise, sweetie. I'm not. I just... I need you... I can't do this, you know? You're young, and you're a sweet boy. You're such a sweet boy. And I know you're trusting, and you're kind. And she'll kind of glance in the mirror up at Luke, and then quickly look away from his gaze again. And you're just such a sweet boy. And there are so many dangerous things out here right now. And I know you have such nice intentions when you go up to these things, but not everything here is as nice as you are, sweetie. You just gotta be a bit tougher about these things, okay?
Okay. I mean, I can try, but I mean, it wasn't being mean, though, that thing in the barn. Like,
Ryan,
yeah.
If you don't know how it would act, you should not assume that it has good intentions. And you already said that you think that the drone probably didn't understand you. And a lot of bad things happens with misunderstandings. I look up in the rearview mirror to look at Kat. And then I'm assuming after saying that the car will fall briefly silent, which gives me a moment to think. And I would like to ask the DM if there is any nearby, or at least near enough, not immediate, so maybe a few hours down the road, where I know a very beautiful spot for Ryan to actually gaze. That is not a dung heap like Bakersfield, or a random pit stop in the highway.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there is a spot along the way as you're making your way to Fresno in that city. There is a beautiful site near like a beach motel in a beachfront. You know that is along the way. As you have checked the map many times, you've checked on the Neuroscape as well.
Ryan, as Kat mentioned, not all the places are as kind as you, but I believe I know a place, and it's along the way. It's probably time you actually see a nice place.
Oh, what did you have in mind?
There's this beach in Fresno, and I remember it from my childhood days. It's a bit of a nostalgia for me as well, but it should be still beautiful. I still have fond memories there.
I've been meaning to get a picture of the coastline just to see the sunset over the waves. I've heard that's very beautiful. So I that would be great. Oh, what time do you think we'll get there? Like just right before sunset, or like are we super close?
We won't hit the sunset, and I don't really think it's a good idea that we wait around for the sunset. I look at the rear view mirror and I'll tell Ryan, we're about an hour away to Fresno, but I believe I know a spot that is way better. It won't be in Fresno, but we can drive a bit further, and then we can roll up to a more elevated place for you to get the perfect view of the beach. How does that sound?
That sounds great. I'll make sure my film's loaded. Will we have to do a lot of hiking, or is it just, is it right over the waves? Like, do you see them crashing into the coast?
There will be some minor hikes. We can drive the car a bit closer to the top. The hike won't be that long. I think we can get there in like 3 hours, and we can spend the better half of an hour to hit the top spot. Actually, I look at Kat in the rearview mirror. You think we can take a picnic and then just sleep in the car before moving on?
She goes to object and then looks at Ryan.
Right, Ryan's kind of like looking out the window ahead just to see if he can spot where we're heading.
She kind of sees his head, like, kind of eagerly, sort of like looking out the window. And then she kind of looks back at Luke, and then just gives like a firm nod, and then looks back out her own window.
Okay. So, we'll get to the spot. We'll be there an hour early. Before we head there, we'll grab some food for a picnic, because I don't think because the snacks and nuts I bought from the pit stop, that won't make a good meal. And then have our evening there, and then we can drive along.
You're in your room. It's late, just past midnight. The dim glow of the streetlight seeps through the curtains, casting long shadows across the floor. You hear a soft knock at the door. It's hurried, though, almost hesitant. And your mother enters. Her face is pale, and her eyes are wide with fear. And you can see her darting back to the hallway, looking in, before she fully steps in and shuts the door quietly. Like, you can see her hold on to the doorknob, and then, you know, people, you twist the doorknob so it doesn't make the clicking sound, and so it's quiet as you shut it. That's what she does. She closes it quickly. The door's behind her, her back is pressed to it, and her breath is like shallow, unsteady. You can see her hair is disheveled, her clothes hastily thrown on, and you can see her fingers are trembling as she presses them against her lips, trying to keep herself quiet.
Ma, is it that again? Are you okay?
She comes closer to you and is kneeling beside your bed. And she says, we have to leave tomorrow morning, Luke, before he wakes up. And your voice cracking, it's just above a whisper, and she's really close, like she's leaning down to you. I'm so scared of what he's planning, of what he'll do to us if we stay. You've heard him talk about that new group, okay? They're dangerous, Luke. I can't let him take you into that.
No, he can't. Okay. And we won't either. We'll leave. I, like, hold her close, and with my frail frame, I'm not a big guy. I hug her. Okay. We will leave tomorrow.
She's holding on to you, and she's like, hands are like around your body, and she's squeezing you gently. She says, "This group, Luke, they're not like the others. They take everything, they control everything. You'll lose who you are, and I won't watch that happen to you, okay?"
Yeah, I'm with you, Mom. I'm with you.
Tomorrow we leave. We leave this city. We leave him behind. Just promise me you'll be ready in the morning, okay?
You know me, Ma. I am always ready when you tell me to.
She leans in and she presses her forehead to yours for a moment.
I hold it a bit longer. Even though she's trying to pull, I'm just holding it. It's like, and under my breath, I'll start whispering. You can do this, Ma. You can do this.
And just with a shaky breath, she immediately stands up. She goes, her eyes dart back to the door. She stands in front of it. You see her trying to, like, brace herself. Mm-hmm. Her fists are clenched. And once again, opens the door very quietly. Peeks her head out first. And then gives you one last look. And you can see her eyes are glossy and gives you a small smile before shutting the door again.
I smile back. I would, like, immediately when she approach, I will approach the door quietly. I'll try to listen if I only hear her footsteps or my dad's footsteps as well. Just making sure that it's, the coast is clear.
It's deathly quiet. You can hear her, like, trying to step on the floorboards, like, lightly. And she's moving very slowly. As she makes her way back to her room down the hall. Well, your parents' room down the hall.
Okay. I look back in my room. I keep everything orderly so that my dad doesn't say anything. So I don't get any attention from him. And I will always carefully open my cabinet. I make sure that the hinges are always oiled so everything is silent so I don't disturb my dad. Because anything in my room is very impersonal and organized. Just in case, none of my valuables gets destroyed, which I always keep hidden. I open my cabinet and there's this one backpack, the same backpack that I'm currently using. It was a Christmas gift from my mother. It's probably the only thing that she has given me that my dad didn't disapprove of, and I'll use that, carefully removing it and start packing the clothes, packing everything that I would need. There's no memorabilia about the place that I've brought. After the clothes, I look at the important in my desk. I have a special drawer for all of my important papers and that black credit card. Take it, just in case. Just in case.
Morning comes. The sun is still low. It's light, muted. The sky is like this dual gray, hinting at rain. And the house is eerily quiet. You look at your alarm clock. It's around 5:30 a.m. A stillness is in the air that raises the hairs on your arms. What do you do at this time?
By that point, since my mom mentioned that before the sun, when it's hit 5:30, I get very agitated. I compulsively reorganize, even though I'm leaving the place, I'm making sure everything is reorganized, and there always have been organized, but I make it extra quiet. I have learned how to be quiet about doing this. And once 5:45 hits, that's where I approach the door, try to listen. It's like, because Ma needs to be coming now.
And you don't hear anything.
I look at my cabinet and think, should I bring my backpack or not? No, I won't do it. I always can rush back. Okay. I take a deep breath and I open the door very slowly so it doesn't make any sound.
The house is still pretty dark. The hallway lights are off. You can see kind of into the living room as well. It's dark in there and it's completely quiet in the house.
I whisper in the hallway, Ma?
Nothing. You're calling her name.
Ma?
Anxiety arising. Are you stepping out at all of the room, or are you just calling her name?
I'm stepping out now since I didn't get heard any reply. And I look down the hall the bedroom of my parents. And when I look down that hall with the light shining from my room, from my lampshade, the hallway kind of zooms in and zooms out at the same time. This very parallax view, as if the sense that that's danger, you don't go there kind of situation. Okay, I can do this. This is Ma. I carefully walk. And I know how to not make sound on the floor, since I grew up in this household. And gingerly, carefully walk towards that bedroom. The distance was not that long, but it felt like a lifetime just heading there. And my ears, like my senses, are all heightened, and cold sweats, hands slightly getting clammy. Now, once I'm in front of the door, I listen.
You're standing in front of the door, and you don't hear anything at all.
I make a whisper, but it's definitely not audible. Ma?
Nothing.
I'll carefully walk back to my room.
As you're walking back to your room, you hear something in the living room. There's a creaking noise.
I freeze. Ma?
Are you just calling out her name, or do you go to the living room?
I'm calling out, and if I don't hear her response...
There's no response.
I will slowly, slowly walk. And while walking, I'm making sure that I'm presentable just in case it's Dad. Like, no creases, nothing. Prim and proper. I approach the living room.
You make your way to the living room. The kitchen is nearby, and as you, like out of peripheral vision, you could see kitchen is untouched, clean. And then again, you hear the slow creak of a chair, but it's dark inside the living room. Then you hear a click. You see your father sitting in a chair, and he had just clicked on the light next to it. And you see he has a dark smile on his face as he's holding a cup of coffee, and he's watching you, unblinking, like he knows something that you don't.
Good morning, sir.
Looking for something, Luke? You look like a lost puppy. She always said you took after her.
I nod.
What are you doing up so early? I know for a fact that your alarm doesn't go off until 7 a.m.
I was just hoping to have a new routine, sir.
Don't lie to me, boy.
Yes, sir.
What are you looking for?
I'm looking for Ma.
Oh, your mother. She's, he takes a sip of his coffee, slowly sets it back down. She's taking some time for herself. A retreat, you could say. She needed some quiet, some reflection, away from all the chaos here. The kind of place where they may help you find peace once and for all. Don't worry. She's exactly where she needs to be. He smiles at you.
My hands are shaking. Can I visit her, sir?
Unfortunately not.
Will I be able to see her again, sir?
I don't think she's a good influence on you, so no.
Okay, sir. May I... Is there anything I can help you with, sir?
Have I ever needed your help before?
No, sir. I just...
You just what? Don't stumble.
Yes, sir. Can I leave, sir?
And he nods at you.
Thank you, sir. And I, handshaking, trying to hold my whole body from shaking too much, walk back to my room.
As you turn around, the first step out, you hear, you think you're different, that you can make it out there alone?
No, sir.
I've seen what happens to people who try to leave. They always come back eventually. Sometimes they don't come back at all.
In my head, there is a lot of shit I want to tell this dude.
She might have been scared, but you? You don't have to be. Fear is for the weak, and I won't have weakness in this family. You'll see it my way soon enough. Just like she should have.
Past tense, sir?
It's funny, you know. The harder people try to run, the more they end up right where they began. You might think you've got a plan, but the world has a way of bringing you back where you belong. You remember that?
Yes, sir. But in my mind, I'm thinking, Ma... was because Ma wanted to get away. I can't stay here. Ma's last wish was to get away. I'm going away. That's all in my head. But I just say, yes, sir. Yes, sir. I won't be weak, sir.
Your mother thought that she could disappear, thought she was smarter than me. But she forgot something, Luke.
What is that, sir?
I always know where my family is.
Yes, sir. In my mind, I need to make sure I don't use that credit card. I need to make sure I leave nothing behind.
Even when they think they're lost. Don't forget that.
Here we go!
Oh my God! He threw.
Here
he
we
threw
go!
The chair.
He threw the chair,
and now he's getting it back. All because right. We're gonna have to sit.
We are in Casey's home. That was Casey's actual chair.
You look out of the window and you see a Toyota Previa upside down on fire.
Oh my God! Oh.
But it's not nearby any trees or anything, so it's fine.
On fire.
It was fine. It's not fine to me, GM. Jesus Christ! That's my fucking car.
Dynamite headbutt!
He screams as he headbutts this man.
Honestly, his left jaundiced eyeball pops out of his head.
Oh! And if you were to take a picture the second their two heads were touching, it might have been an intimate, tender scene between friends or lovers. But if you were to take a picture at any other second, yeah. It is just absolutely horrifying.
For some men, violence is a form of intimacy, which is so sad.
That is
maybe
so
for
sad.
This man. But anyway. Boom! Smashed in the head!
Bodhi has a pocket full of, like, one oversized precious moment angel that has a real strange face.
Oh, I thought that was your dick.
Oh! It was his dick. There's a hole in his pocket and his penis, which does resemble a precious moment angel with a strange face.
Oh, it's a strange face, but it actually looks like a pretty normal penis head.
And that's what we call facts.
He looks back and he says one last threatening phrase, pointing to the bar.
I'm gonna... And Violet shoots him in the head.
You see this guy's ear get blown off, flying off his head.
Ah! Bye-bye.
And then at this point, Scratch pops up like a mummy.
Ah, mummy!
Dynamite headbutt!
Something is rising, piecing itself together from the bodies and viscera around it. Its black wings spread, and it looks back at you with red, wet eyes.
Got her.
And we transition back to our present time. And you guys are still driving. You find yourself now on this like two-lane stretch of highway as you make your way. Are you guys going? Are you guys just driving past Fresno? Which you can.
No, we just go to Fresno, pick up some food, like decent food.
Okay.
A proper sandwich, some picnic stuff. Since do we have blankets on our on the boot?
Everything was taken.
We'll buy some stuff. And when we were in any place we can buy, I always look at the credit card and in my head, well, guess what, Dad? You didn't find me. I'm finding you. And I just swipe it more confidently now.
So you guys started off with a small, quiet town to get the gas where Ryan met the drone. So there, San Francisco is about 170 miles away from that small town, or 275 kilometers. You're getting closer, but there's still a bit of road ahead. And as you continue driving, scenery changes. You pass through stretches of farmland dotted with livestock and strange mechanical drones tending the crops, old 1990s billboards, you know, towering structures and things like that. One of them advertising Centurion Insurance, protecting tomorrow today. You see stuff like that. Your gas tank is full for now. Without interruptions, you should make it to San Francisco on this tank. But that's assuming nothing gets in the way. I'm sure nothing is going to happen, you guys. The highway stretches ahead. Clear for now. But we're still driving. It's been a few hours since your last stop. You guys can all feel the ache in your legs, a dull hunger starting to settle in. Car's silent hum, wearing on your focus. A rest stop or some food wouldn't hurt before you push forward.
The scenery stop for the hike.
You guys want to pull over for the scenery?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're getting closer. SF is almost here, everybody. But right before you get there, you pull the car off the highway. You find yourself on a winding road that leads towards the coastline. You start to see the ocean is starting to stretch in front of you. You guys are driving past it and getting closer to kind of the parking lot area before you get to this secluded beach. It appears as you reach the end of the road. Yeah, and you see small rocky cliffs that rise along the edges. The scent of salt water and the gentle breeze as it tugs at your clothes. It's a little colder out here. The sun is starting to hang low in the sky.
Can we hurry and park? I can see some of the birds from here, so I wanted to get a shot of them before they start roosting in that overhang over there.
Don't worry. I know where we are. I confidently drive the roadway until the convenient parking stop where there's a sign it's a wear down sign. It's like the chain is kind of loose, so it's slightly tilted. The writing is gone, but you definitely can just read beach still clearly. It's like, okay, we should be safe here. And I park it. I'm assuming Ryan will just open a door and start heading towards that hiking area.
Ryan fumbles with the door, kind of pushes out. I'll meet you guys up ahead. Starts jogging.
Okay. I start getting the stuff from the boot. I'm assuming Kat would help. We're getting picnic stuff. Because I'm just handing you the lighter thing. I look at the heavy thing and I said, no, I can't carry that myself. So I was like, take one, because the right side, I take the left. Actually, I know we're not your husband or your son, but hopefully we're a good substitute for now.
Now, as you guys are having this moment, you can kind of see off in the distance, Ryan has like ran ahead of you. Ryan, as you're getting deeper into the beach, like a layer of fog has started to roll in, kind of like creeping silently. The air feels cooler now, kind of dampness, stillness around you. It gives the landscape this almost otherworldly appearance. To anyone else, it may seem unsettling, but to you, this is perfect. The fog cloaks everything in mystery. It transforms the familiar into something dreamlike. It's the perfect image to send home to your family. What is he thinking right now?
He's kind of looking around, looking through the viewfinder. It's like, I gotta get the perfect angle. His mind's kind of drawing that rule of thirds as he's kind of lining up how the fog's on the ground with some of the rocks and surroundings. And just trying to, like, he'll look at a certain vista or part of the ways and then kind of think on it. It's like, that's good, but is it perfect? And kind of shifting through the fog. He'll kind of, like, crouch down a bit so that the mist is on the bottom of the image. And kind of just, like, squeeze the Kodak and, like, hear that familiar churning of the gears as it kind of prints out one. We'll kind of flip it in his hands a bit to get it to process, look at it, and then look around to see if there's a better place.
As you're taking these images, the first ones that you're seeing, these are beautiful images. As you're taking them in, and as you're looking around, you can see that there are lots of rock, like cliffs that you can go up or even take pictures of those as well. But for potential different atmospheres and things like that, there's a lot of rock cliffs you can climb to get a different perspective.
Yeah, definitely thinking back to his conversation with Luke, he's like, yeah, definitely if I got higher up, I think that would be the perfect shot to see all the stretching coastline. And so he'll look for like the tallest cliff he can feasibly climb. As he's kind of drying out a lot of those photos that he's been taking and putting those in his jacket pocket.
There's a few rock cliffs that are really easy to climb up. It almost looks like it's been climbed so many times that it's like those like man-formed kind of walkways. There is a spot that is even higher that you know you can get the perfect shot of the sun going down here, but you have to get a little bit higher.
He kind of opens up his den jacket, sees the bunch of photos, like, these are great. And he thinks back to sitting on the couch with his dad, who's like, but is it good enough? And then he'll look at that.
You know that the money shot is about 6 to 10 feet higher.
And that's exactly where he wants to go. He kind of nods with determination, makes sure his camera's strapped on a little tighter.
So I'm going to need an agility roll from you. But because it's a little bit misty, it's a little bit wet, it will be at a minus one.
No successes. I like to think he kind of scratches his hands a bit because this one doesn't have those natural handholds from everyone who's climbed on it. And so like he looks down at his hands, kind of like, rubs him a bit before kind of just gritting his teeth and kind of trying again and kind of jamming his hands into the various like rock crevices.
Would you like to push the roll?
Definitely.
Okay, go ahead and roll 4d6 again.
So one success and then one failure.
One success will get you up there. You do lose one hope.
Okay.
It's a little bit frustrating trying to get up there. Your right foot kind of slips a little bit, but you do find like some grip eventually. And your hands get up, and indeed, it was worth the climb. You are right at the, what is it called? Yeah, golden hour. And you just made it. And golden hour doesn't last that long. And so, you know, you have to get the shot.
He'll quickly rip off his denim jacket, lay it down so he can lay on his belly and kind of prop up the camera with his elbows to get it sturdy. As he kind of like looks through the viewfinder, he's gonna kind of whisper to himself like, this one's for you, mom and dad. Kind of slowly depress the button.
And you take the shot, and indeed it is the money shot of golden hour. As best as you can get on this kind of cheap camera, but it's the best that you can get. It's beautiful to you. Luke and Catherine, you can see this from far away. You could see him like climbing and then kind of slipping as he tries to get even higher.
Oh, he's fine.
While Catherine decides to go take a picture of Ryan, what are you doing, Luke?
I try to lift the cooler and I take 1-2 step. Carry it again. 1-2
step. Are you trying to find a spot on the beach to, you know, roll out the towels and the blankets and all that?
Definitely. And I'm also I'm just watching them. And in my own head, I said, I might not be a parent, but I know how it is to have a wonderful mother. You don't know it, Kat, but you're actually pretty great.
And you guys make your way back to Luke, and you sit down to eat dinner, I would say. It's about dinner time. It's early dinner, I guess. But it is really cold out here. It's, like, really cold. It's, yeah. Do you only have blankets? Did you bring firewood? Or did you just brought blankets?
We prepared for that.
Okay.
Considering that this would have been a childhood thing, I probably know a few things. Making sure clothes. I definitely, by that point, I have my, like, button downs rolled up already. And a few buttons, open. Definitely something that's covering me to keep me warm. And I already dig a fire pit. You know, I already found a few, what's the term? I won't say stones, but something to cover it. Let me just make it more appealing, I guess. Random driftwoods to make the circle more appealing. I already throw in a bunch of dry wood, which we bought. It's like, we definitely splurged in Fresno with my credit card. So it was everything. And then, by the time they're approaching, I probably have lit up the fire already. And it's picking up pace and it starts to rise up. And then from the big, I won't say cooler, but it's like the picnic bag, a big one. It's one of those whisker basket kind of thing. And I see them return. I pull out some barbecue sticks and a pack of marshmallows.
Nice. You guys make your way there and you can see the fire.
Ryan starts to, like, when he sees the bag of marshmallows, he just starts booking it over. He's so excited.
Yep. Dessert first.
Due to a technical issue, Catherine's audio for the ending part of this episode was lost, but to keep things moving, I'll be summarizing the rest of the episode for everyone. After a long day by the ocean, the travelers gathered around a small campfire on the beach, sharing stories, laughing, and enjoying the quiet, peaceful night under the stars. The sound of the waves crashing against the shore filled the background as they finished their meal and settled in for the night. Eventually, they decided to sleep in their car, parked just a short distance away from the beach, savoring these last few moments of calm before the journey ahead. With the fire dying down, they all found rest, knowing that tomorrow they would begin the official drive to San Francisco. And that's where we'll leave them for now. Thank you for listening to The Electric State, The Path to Dawn. I'm your game master and narrator, Maia. Joining me are Arcturus as Ryan, Meg as Catherine, and Serge as Luke. This podcast is available on all major platforms, so don't forget to share it with your friends, family, and anyone who loves a good story. Thanks again, and we'll see you on the road next time.
Out of character, DM, I'm not from California.
Have you not been to a beach ever?
I love mountains. I live literally next to the Alps.
You've never been to a beach?
I've been to a beach. Okay. I hated it.
Okay, this is where improv comes in. You know of a beach. You've watched movies.
Yeah, I can describe it. I'm just making sure. Does it need to be accurate? Because I have the perfect scene in my head.
No, it's okay. It's okay if it's not.
Okay. Now, in character.
Yes. Luke. Oh, God.
Our DM is dying.
I should have brought my water.
Don't die now. Don't leave us hanging.
We haven't made it to San Francisco yet.